by VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Military sources said Russian and Syrian jets struck the rebel-held city of Idlib in northern Syria on Sunday as President Bashar al-Assad vowed to crush the insurgents who had swept into the city of Aleppo. Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen has more.
Videos released by the Syrian volunteer group the White Helmets on Sunday showed blown-out buildings and vehicles in a residential area of Idlib and injured people being moved into ambulances. Military sources say Russian and Syrian jets struck the rebel-held city in the north of the country on Sunday as President Bashar al-Assad vowed to crush insurgents who had swept into the city of Aleppo. Idlib province has fallen completely under rebel control in the boldest rebel assault for years, in a civil war where the front lines had largely been frozen since 2020. Insurgents swept into the city of Aleppo on Friday night, forcing the army to redeploy in the biggest challenge to Assad in years. Army sources said Syrian troops who had withdrawn from the city were now regrouping, and reinforcements were also being sent to help in the counterattack.
Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen. U.S. President Joe Biden on Sunday pardoned his son Hunter, sparing the younger Biden a possible prison sentence for federal felony gun and tax convictions and reversing his past promises not to use the extraordinary powers of the presidency for the benefit of his family members. The Democratic president had previously said he would not pardon his son or commute his sentence after his convictions in the two cases in Delaware and California. The move comes weeks before Hunter Biden was set to receive his punishment after his trial conviction in the gun case and guilty plea on tax charges. This is VOA News. The White House says negotiations continue to free Israeli hostages, including an American Israeli man just shown in a video. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan says even though the progress is being kept under wraps, negotiations to free the remaining Israeli hostages are still taking place.
President Biden pledged, coming off of the announcement of the Lebanon ceasefire, that we would be working round the clock to produce a ceasefire and hostage deal in Gaza. We are working to do that.
He was on NBC's Meet the Press. Sullivan says he's spoken with hostages' relatives, including the family of 20-year-old Israeli-American Adon Alexander, who was just shown in a Hamas video.
That video was a cruel reminder of Hamas's brutality and of the fact that they are holding so many hostages from so many countries.
I'm Jackie Quinn.
Taiwan's President Lai Ching-te visited Hawaii over the weekend, a two-day trip to the U.S. state while in transit to the South Pacific. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
The stopover in Hawaii and one planned for the territory of Guam have drawn fierce criticism from Beijing, which claims Taiwan as its own territory. China objects to official exchanges between the self-ruled democracy of Taiwan and the U.S., the island's biggest backer and military provider. There were no high-ranking U.S. or Hawaii state officials to greet Lai at the Honolulu Hotel, where supporters cheered in Mandarin, some waving Taiwanese flags. He visited Hawaii's leading museum of natural history and native Hawaiian culture, Bishop Museum. Lai is on a week-long trip to visit the Marshall Islands, Tuvalu, and Palau. I'm Karen Chamas.
UN plastic talks collapsed Monday as countries failed to agree to targets to curb plastic pollution. VOA's Christina Manente reports.
Countries negotiating a global treaty to curb plastic pollution failed to reach an agreement on Monday, with over 100 nations wanting to cap production, while a handful of oil producers were prepared only to target plastic waste. The fifth UN Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee meeting to yield a legally binding global treaty in Busan, South Korea, was meant to be the final one. However, countries remained far apart on the basic scope of a treaty and could agree only to postpone key decisions to a future meeting. The most divisive issues included capping plastic production, managing plastic products and chemicals of concern, and financing to help developing countries implement the treaty. Christina Manenti, VOA News.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, December 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Biden begins his much-anticipated first visit to Africa, specifically Angola, today, Monday.
I think everything's ready. I mean, members of civil society are receiving invitation to meet the president on December 3rd. That'll be at U.S. Embassy. So I think everyone is excited, waiting for President Biden's visit.
Namibia braces for a Mozambique-style nationwide post-election protest. Tanzania's opposition ACT Wazalendo party calls for the annulment of the November 27 local government elections. Kenyan President Ruto assumed the chairmanship of the EAC amid instability and financial crisis.
I will work with members of the summit to deliver on key priorities, including enhancing peace, stability, and economic development in our region, increasing intra-EAC trade and investment.
And Los Angeles' sanctuary city ordinance gives hope to its undocumented immigrants. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's thoughts are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Joe Biden begins his much-anticipated first visit to Africa, specifically Angola. Today, Monday, the president is expected to stop in the island nation of Cape Verde, another former Portuguese colony. The White House says the president's trip will focus on strengthening regional security, growing economic opportunities, and improving technological and scientific relations. Florindo Chivukute is the executive director of Friends of Angola. He tells me that many people are excited about Biden's visit and hope that whatever investments accruing from the visit would benefit ordinary Angolans.
I think everything's ready. I mean, members of civil society are receiving invitation to meet the president on December 3rd. That'll be at U.S. Embassy. And I'm sure the Angolan officials and members of the opposition are receiving as well. So I think everyone is excited, waiting for President Biden's visit. Of course, different groups have different interests in Angola, as you can imagine. But one thing that really came as a surprise to all of us is that President Biden stopping by Cabo Verde, one of the most democratic states in Africa, in particular in the Portuguese-speaking countries community, CPLP.
Why do you think stopping by Cape Verde is surprising to you?
Well, I mean, surprising in the sense that, I mean, it wasn't an agenda. Actually, it's a good thing. I think that by stopping by Cape Verde before traveling to Angola, that's a really showing to the Africans and the world that, you know, democracy matters. And it's not by accident, I think, that the White House chose Cape Verde, because Cape Verde has the same history as Angola, Mozambique, but yet they're way ahead of us in terms of democracy, because there was a lot of criticism against the Biden administration why he chose Angola, related to the decline of democracy in Angola, which is a very young democracy and a serious human rights concern. Of course, transparency as well. So to balance those criticisms, so President Biden or the White House has chosen to stop by Cabo Verde before it's going to Angola.
Let's look at the other highly publicized benefits from President Biden's visit, particularly the Lobito Rail Corridor. What do you think about this?
I mean, it's extremely beneficial, I have no doubt. We're still yet to see, but I believe that will be beneficial, because the Lobito Corridor will connect Angola, DRC, and Zambia. We hope it will do so, because there's a lot of criticism in regard to this investment. Folks are calling the Biden administration, making sure that the colonial-style investment doesn't repeat on U.S. investment in places like Angola or elsewhere within the continent, that this investment will, on the contrary, locals, communities will benefit from this investment. And also, unlike the Chinese investment, where the usual brings 10% of the labor, the construction companies are the Chinese companies, the old material comes from China, we're hoping that it will provide employment here in Angola. And most importantly, transparency, because that's one of the biggest issues we have on Chinese investment in Angola. There's no transparency. So we hope that the U.S. investment in Angola and elsewhere in the continent will be beneficial for two main reasons. One, its transparency. And then the second one is jobs. We hope that they will develop those communities throughout the world, Angola, DRC, and Zambia, and will provide jobs.
Florindo Chibukute is the executive director of Friends of Angola. He was speaking with me from the Angolan capital, Luanda. Kenyan President William Ruto has been named the chair of the East African Community Heads of State Summit. The region's presidents met over the weekend in Arusha, Tanzania, amid deteriorating relations between member states. Moses Yabria Rimana reports.
Traditional drums and dancers welcomed the presidents and dignitaries during the 24th Ordinary Summit of the EAC Heads of State that took place on Saturday in Arusha. But behind the entertainment, there was growing tension as peace and security in the Eastern DRC took the center stage. As he took over the chairmanship of the group, Kenya's President William Ruto said that his tenure will be to ensure that the stability of the community is guaranteed.
Looking ahead, I will work with members of the summit to deliver on key priorities, including enhancing peace, stability, and economic development in our region, increasing intra-EAC trade and investment that now stands at almost 28%.
In the communique released by the heads of state, the summit received a report from the EAC-led Nairobi process for the peace and security in DRC, raising concern over the deteriorating situation. The Kenyan president says that the community has agreed to streamline the process, bringing together all the stakeholders of the Nairobi process led by Uhuru Kenyatta and the Rwandan process, which is led by the president of Angola.
And we are in support of a process rather than running two parallel processes. It is better that we have one process that would help consolidate all efforts so that again we can meaningfully contribute to the peace and stability in DRC.
With the East African community expanding from three countries in the 1990s to eight countries today, Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni called on the member states to remove the nine tariff barriers that have increasingly impacted the free movement of goods and people within the region.
Why we insist on Pan-Africanism? Number one, prosperity for our people. But number two, strategic security, to be able to guard ourselves against all these adventurers. And using the undugu that God gave us, we are lucky. All these people we are talking about are either similar or the same.
Due to nine tariff barriers by member states, intra-EAC trade is still less than 30%. Veronica Nduva is the Secretary General of the East African Community.
We are reflecting on the challenges that face us, but we are also exploring the opportunities that are available to the 300 million plus citizens of this community. How can we make them move freely? How can we make sure they can access goods and services from each of our partner states?
Relations between DRC and Rwanda remain tense, and Burundi is closing its borders with the neighboring Rwanda. Financing the community has become an uphill climb, as member states' contributions have declined significantly. Now, the EAC leaders are pushing for a sustainable financing mechanism based on equity. A communique released by the summit's Council of Ministers says that the group is working to finalize the schedule of sanctions to be implemented for defaulting member states. For Daybreak Africa, I'm Moses Aviyarimana.
Namibians are awaiting results from Wednesday's November 27 presidential and parliamentary elections. However, opposition candidate Panduleni Itula of the Independent Patriots for Change Party is threatening to reject the results because of alleged irregularities. Opposition parties said Sunday that they would support Itula's decision to challenge the results in the Supreme Court. This after election officials extend the voting from Wednesday to Saturday due to logistical and technical failures, according to reports. Phil Yalangula is the executive director of Namibia Rights. He tells me that there is a fear of a Mozambique-style nationwide post-election protest.
The latest is the vote counting is still underway. It has not yet been completed. The results will be announced hopefully very soon, maybe tomorrow, day after tomorrow. However, the opposition groups have threatened to go to court. They are claiming that the voting process was marked by widespread irregularities and the process was deeply flawed. They have rejected the outcome, even if the outcome has not yet been officially pronounced. And tomorrow, I understand that there will be Mozambique-style countrywide protest against the outcome.
Okay, so you are saying the opposition are planning a protest, although the results have not been announced.
That's correct.
Talk about the postponement of the election. Tell us, why was the voting process not postponed but extended? Is that correct?
That's correct. The voting process was extended because there were delays in some constituencies and polling stations caused by logistics on the part of the electoral commission, which includes electronic verification devices, as well as transportation problems. And the electoral commission then, therefore, to compensate for those people who were able to vote on the 27th of November, can now get the opportunity to cast their votes during those 2 days of extension in those areas that were affected by those logistical problems.
Of course, Phil, this is coming on the heels of the Mozambique election. Is there a concern in Namibia?
Yes, there is a very, very serious concern that the opposition actually all along, they were intent on disrupting the voting process. Now it looks like that eventuality has now arrived, and they are going to organize countrywide demonstrations, and there are fears that the Mozambique-style violence or those that took place several years ago in Kenya or even in Egypt with Mubarak over there or in Sudan will also happen here in Namibia. And that is a very serious concern, even on our part.
Phil Yanagola is the executive director of Namibia Rights. He was speaking with us from the capital, Windhoek. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bucky in Washington. Today is Monday, December 2nd. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. We are also on social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. One of Tanzania's opposition parties is calling for the annulment of the November 27 local government elections and a new vote. Dorothy Semu, the leader of the Alliance for Change and Transparency, ACT Wazalendo, says the November poll was marred by instances of voter intimidation, arrest, abductions, and harassment of opposition poll agents. Meanwhile, the ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi, or CCM, says it has won more than 98% of the 230,882 local government seats. ACT Wazalendo's Dorothy Semu tells me that members who try to challenge the alleged electoral malpractices face brutal repression, including arrests and physical assault.
They are demanding a fresh election under a new electoral law and the Independent National Electoral Commission, knowing that we will have the law of how this National Electoral Commission would oversee the local government elections, which was not the case. How soon, really, that will be in the discussions? We are going to start discussions with all those people who are working for the democracy of our party, and we will see how it goes. But this can be done.
How realistic are these demands?
For us, we see this as a realistic demand, doable demand, keeping in mind that these things were already in pipeline. They were just disrupted by the ruling party to let the Ministry of Prime Minister's Office, Regional Administration, Local Government to take over these elections. But sincerely, we believe the National Electoral Commission would have done a better job than what we are seeing now.
You said the election was marred by irregularities. What evidence do you have?
have evidence for these irregularities. For example, in Kigoma municipality, a police inspector was apprehended by the citizens while attempting to stuff hundreds of fake ballots into the ballot box, causing public outrage. We had evidence of our leaders, members who were brutally beaten by the police in several areas, Tunduru, Lindi, Mchinga, Muleba, Kigoma Urban. More than 60 of our members were detained while attempting to curb the irregularities during the voting process on the 27th. We, as a party, are continuing to collect the evidence, the activities which took place during the voting day, and we are going to document these, and we will give out the report of what transpired in different areas of the country. I would say these elections were the most shambolic elections we have ever had in the country. Our party polling agents were expelled from the polling stations. Some polling stations were opened very late. Some polling stations, when the party agents went in, they found that the ballot boxes were already stuffed with ballots.
Did you bring all these discrepancies to the attention of the Electoral Commission?
We brought these all irregularities to the attention of the presiding officers, administration, who were administering the elections.
Dorothy Jonas Semu is the leader of the opposition ACT Wazalendo Party. She was speaking with us from Dar es Salaam. Tanzanian government officials did not respond to our request for a response. Ivory Coast former First Lady Simu Gbagbo on Saturday announced that she would run for president in 2025, vowing to build a new and improved version of the West African nation. Nicknamed the Iron Lady, Gbagbo is the ex-wife of former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo, the first former head of state to face trial for crimes against humanity at the International Criminal Court. The tribunal in The Hague subsequently acquitted him. Los Angeles has approved a so-called sanctuary city ordinance. It's a response to President-elect Donald Trump's promise of mass deportations when he assumes the presidency in January. The ordinance won't stop federal officials from deporting undocumented immigrants, but it reinforces the city's vow to protect its immigrant population. Angelina Bakhtasarian has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Claudia Ventura has lived in Los Angeles for 20 years. She has a job and a family here, but no legal documentation. Ventura is among the roughly 800,000 LA residents who lack U.S. legal status. And like many others, she feels uneasy after Donald Trump won the presidential election.
Now, when I see not a lot of people in the street, it's less people, it's bad. Yeah, I think the people care for the deportation.
The Los Angeles City Council approved a so-called Sanctuary City Ordinance on November 19th. This means local police and state authorities are not going to share information on people's immigration status with federal immigration authorities, unless it involves a serious crime.
A city ordinance like this sends a very strong message to the community in Los Angeles and to the rest of the nation that in Los Angeles, resources available will be used for the purposes of keeping the community safe, of keeping the community trusting in their own leaders, and in keeping the community thriving, not in arresting them or causing chaos in their communities.
Yet not everyone in the city agrees with this decision. Trump supporters, roughly 38% of residents, according to the election results, don't want LA to be a sanctuary city.
I think it's a disgrace. I think that we have to take care of our own first. When we say America first, it doesn't mean you don't take care of others. It just means we take care of our own first.
Linda Hanna's parents are from Mexico. They came into the United States legally, and she believes whoever has done so illegally should be deported. The ordinance will have little practical effect because LA has barred police or immigration officials from questioning a person about their immigration status since 1979. The LA's new status doesn't mean there can't be deportations. It just means that local authorities won't help federal officers find and deport undocumented immigrants.
I think that federal officers will start with mass raids as opposed to asking random passersby for documents on the street. I believe there will be mass raids at factories and in the agricultural industry where, according to official data, undocumented immigrants are most likely to work.
Cabrera believes amnesty is a better idea than deportations.
We have to insist that mass legalization is the option. We have to insist that there's a better way to treat immigrants in this country.
After the inauguration on January 20th, Trump has strongly suggested he might declare a national emergency and use U.S. military personnel to help conduct mass deportations, a move that immigration advocates have vowed to fight in court. Frangelina Magdasaran in Los Angeles, California. NRI's VOA News.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with basketball as the semi-finalist for the East Division Elite 16 road to the Basketball African League 2025 have emerged. Host Nairobi City Thunder, Uganda's City Oilers, Burundi's Urunani, and Cape Verde's Kiro Star are the four teams in contention for a place in the Elite Division. Urunani, who are on a 7-0 run in the road to the Basketball African League, play Kiro Star, while neighbors Oilers and Thunder clash in the second semi-final. The winners of the semis will automatically book their spots to the Basketball Africa League 2025 season. In athletics, African athletes swept the podium as Kenya's Sebastian Sawe set a world lead record on his marathon debut, while Ethiopia's Megetu Elemu also captured a solid victory at the Valencia Marathon Trinidad Alfonso, a World Athletics Elite Platinum Level event on Sunday. Sawe's winning time was 2 hours 2 minutes 5 seconds, just 12 seconds off the fastest ever debut set by his compatriot Kevin Kiptum 2 years ago. Ethiopia's Megretu Alemu won the women's race with a personal best of 2 hours 16 minutes 49 seconds. Ugandan Stella Sisang was second in 2 hours 18 minutes 26 seconds, and Ethiopian Tireye Mesfen came in third in 2 hours 18 minutes 35 seconds. Staying with athletics, Olympic champion Lesile Tebogo of Botswana have been announced as the World Athletes of the Year at the World Athletics Award 2024 held in Monaco. Following a vote by fans, Botswana's Tebogo received top honors on an evening that saw 6 athletes crowned in 3 categories, track, field and out of stadium, before the overall winner was revealed. Tebogo was confirmed as Men's Track Athlete of the Year, with Sydney McLaughlin Levron receiving the women's honor. And now to rugby, where South Africa men in national rugby team, the Springbok Sevens, went crashing out of the Dubai Sevens as it went down to New Zealand 24-17 in a pulsating quarterfinal. The Blitzboks have won the last 5 Dubai Sevens tournaments, but their bench was their undoing as the All Blacks got their first win against their traditional rivals since 2007-2008 season in the Desert Tournament. In a game where the lead changed several times, the Blitzboks eventually showed holes in their defense late in the game as the bench flattered and the All Blacks powered through with 2 late tries to win the game. It means the Blitzboks will now go into the 5th place playoff, where they will face Olympic champions France, who lost to Fiji in the quarterfinals. The Blitzboks beat France in their final pool game on Saturday. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's about this Monday, December 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing that you
We'll have a great week.